Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkin.
And this is Core Intuition, a split in the road. Hello, Daniel. Well, last week we talked about the Apple Watch, the Apple Car, a bunch of other Apple-related news, and I feel like this show should kind of be part two of the Apple Watch discussion, because as soon as we stopped recording, there became even more comments about the pricing of the watch and also some more rumors about the Apple Car, but specifically the discussion just completely took off about the watch pricing and people speculating and people having educated guesses. And as soon as we stopped recording, I think you and I both thought, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're wrong about that. Maybe the price is going to be what I would call ridiculously high.
Maybe we have no idea what we're talking about in the first place. And then on that particular day, it only took like 30 minutes after we stopped recording for our Twitter, my Twitter timeline and your mind line, whatever it is you use these days to communicate with the world, your psychic internet connection was filled with people saying, clearly, there's so much gold in this thing. I think I saw Matt Drance's tweet, which I think was the first one I tweeted to you, or I didn't tweet to you, obviously. I linked it to you after we recorded, and I was like, maybe we really did, not know what we were talking about. Because his thing was like pointing out that gold, crude, raw gold. I don't know if they ever call gold crude, but raw gold, whatever, gold if you want to buy some, just to like make something out of it, which presumably Apple is doing or has done. It's over $1,000 per ounce. And I know so little about everything. I don't even really know how to visualize how much an ounce is, let alone how much an ounce of gold is, let alone how many ounces or fractions of an ounce might be in a typical Apple Watch-like frame.
Yeah. Well, and first of all, let me stop you right there. And it's funny how we automatically assume that everyone you're following on Twitter is an expert in gold and watches. I mean, when did this happen?
Well, some of these people actually kind of know what they're talking about a little bit more than I do when it comes to gold. I remember last week I was the one that was like, well, it's all the diamonds on the watch.
Right. I mean, we didn't know. Although I think actually I listened to that show. Of course, I was editing it and some of it, I was like, oh, gosh, I wish I hadn't said that. But actually, some of it holds up. And the fact is, we do not know how much this watch is going to cost, except the entry-level model, which we assume is the Sport, which we assume is $350, as Apple has said. We don't know. So it's all speculation, even if it's a little bit of an educated guess.
Well, yeah, it can be more informed. Let's just take it as a given, Manton. I think it's fair to say that neither you or I last week knew that the price of gold was over $1,000 per ounce.
I would say knew or cared.
Or cared, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I want to get to on this show is, first of all, I think we should put out actual guesses about what we think the Apple Watch is going to cost. Because John Gruber has famously said, $5,000 to $10,000 or more. Other people have thrown out numbers in that range. I think we should put stake in the ground. How much is it going to cost? And then we'll see where it falls out next month when it ships. But other than that, I think there's a second question, and which is, what does this say about Apple if they're actually charging $10,000? And this is something like when it started to become more clear that this might be very expensive, it actually started to upset me a little bit, because this, forget about the car, forget about all these other, supposed missteps that Apple does over the years, things that the media jokes about and mainstream people joke about or make fun of Apple for. This actually really bothers me if they are now catering to the super rich with a $10,000, $15,000 watch. This is not the company I remember as like, making the computer for the rest of us. And, what is Apple now? I mean, we talk about fashion all the time, but they have totally gone off the rails with this if they're really charging that much.
I kind of hear where you're coming from, but I'm trying to touch base with my reality check, which is that Apple has always served the relatively to super rich. I mean, at times when, like in the article we linked with John Gruber last week, talking about the Macintosh 2 VX, I think costing like $14,000 in 1990s money. There's always been, let's put it this way. There's always been something for the moderately to very rich from Apple that was available for sale.
Yeah, but here's the big difference. It had to be that expensive back then, right? If you wanted something as great and powerful and kind of world-changing as those early Macs were, you had to pay that much because that's how much it cost. Well, the watch is not like that.
It is like that if you consider that the costs of the raw ingredients that are going into it probably cost so much that even with like a $10,000 price point, let's say, I would not be surprised to learn that if Apple sells a watch for $10,000, that they paid $7,500 in costs to make that watch.
Well, no, let me back up and rephrase what I mean, though. That is true, I think. They will have a healthy profit margin on these, but it's true that it's going to cost a lot to make these.
No, right.
But the difference is, if you want the power that a watch gives you, the sort of it changes your life in a good way, it costs $350. Right.
Yep.
In the old days, if you wanted the power that a Mac gave you, it cost what it cost. There wasn't a cheap and a $10,000 model. It was just like it was a little expensive, but that's how much a computer cost back then. That's not the case now. You're purely paying for a fashion accessory.
Yeah, you're right. I get what you're saying. The key point here, though, is that you are struggling to accept that Apple is selling a product whose value does not lie intrinsically in its functionality. And there has always been some of that. I mean, we had some weird products in the past where it was like, why am I paying more for this thing? Just because, you know, why is the black MacBook $100 more?
Yeah.
I got, you know, but more than that, like it was always clear that the more premium products, the more like, I thought anyway, it was always clear that like the MacBook Pro was a higher markup than, you know, in other words, like the lower cost stuff, Apple was straining in a sense to make it affordable, giving up more of their profit to make it more accessible. But they were just taking the fact that, I guess what I'm saying is it was never entirely a pure functionality sale. And that's kind of been the story of Apple and the criticism of Apple for as long as I can remember, is that they have always sold a combination of pure functionality with aesthetic style. And to people who only want pure functionality, I'm not saying that this is where you land, Manton, far from it. But for people out there in the world who do, those have been the classic like people who opted for PCs that were, you know, $300 instead of a iMac that's $1,000, right? And so now we've just got like this new, I agree with you, it's a very different proposition now because we're dealing in this weird market of things that are super valuable because they are composed of super valuable materials. And the fact of the matter is, though, if it turns out that it's a $10,000 watch with a $7,500 cost, that's the same profit margin as the Max. At least, you know, I'm not up to date with it these days, but that was Apple's like classic ha-ha world. We are getting away with bloody murder here by charging, like by taking 25% profit margins. And you could have said back then, I don't like this company because they're jerks. They're taking 25% profit margin. And it would be easy to say like, if Apple had like started off its life and spent like the first 10 years taking 5% profit margins, and then one day they come out with like this Mac 2 VFX that takes a 25% profit margin, and you go, why? And they go, yeah. Well, don't you like the case?
Well, but this is really beyond profit margin. I will never fault Apple for taking 25%, 30%, whatever profit margin. Like they do great work and their stuff is worth more than pretty much any other company, in my opinion. In the old days, it was worth more because of the quality and because of the user experience. Now there are a bunch of other factors, but that's okay. I think my problem is just the level, the kind of exaggerated nature of this, where it really, this product, if it is $10,000, and I don't think it's going to be that much, but if it is, it really is like a 1%, top 1% kind of thing. Like no normal person.
Yes.
Pays $10,000. I mean, that is serious. That is super rich. Like no normal person is going to do that. Right? Am I off? I mean,
no, you're not wrong here. I definitely agree with you. This is a split in the road. This is, and especially if Apple ends up selling any watch for thousands of dollars. The fact is the cat is out of the bag. They already announced they're selling a watch that has gold all over it.
Right.
And they've presented it to the world in this kind of like, you know, Gucci handbag style soft presentation, where it's clear they're going for that market. Like, there's no fighting it at this point. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying you're fighting it, but like, just to put it into perspective, like, we don't even have to speculate about some of this. It's like, is Apple going after the luxury market, selling products that wear the style and sort of intrinsic richness of the product is more important to the particular product SKU, let's say SKU, like the particular item, you know, the 10,000 watch versus the 350 watch. Yes, that's what Apple's doing. And I agree with you. It's a little uncomfortable. Here's my take on though. This is what I like to think a company like Apple does at its best, is they sort of identify where there's room to take a little more profit and pass that along into, you know, some level of economy and reasonableness at the lower end. So definitely over the past like 10 years, 15 years, like in particular since the iMac, right? It seems like Macs have been, you know, comparatively speaking, they've gotten cheaper and cheaper. They've gotten more competitive with the kind of stuff you'd expect to see on the PC side of things. And part of that, though, is that there's just always something kind of really, to my mind anyway, I know a lot of like PC fans would disagree, but there's always something at the low end of the Mac product lines that's kind of surprisingly cheap for Apple. Mm-hmm. And that, I would say, is sort of financed by the room for higher profit margins in the more expensive products. And the truth is, people who buy the $3,000 MacBook Pro, say, they don't really notice if they paid a couple hundred dollars more to Apple, you know, in terms of profit margin than the person who paid $1,000.
Right.
And I think, so looking on the bright side of all this, look, Manton, I sense where your discomfort is, but I'm totally comforted by the fact that there's still a $350 watch, because I see Apple identifying this $10,000 watch market. If they capture that, hey, you know, and I got to be careful here not to judge those watch buyers too harshly, but I basically can't relate to them. So I say, hey, take their money. It's better that Apple takes that money than some other fancy schmancy watch company, because all the money that goes into Apple from those people who would ordinarily be spending it on other fancy watch companies, that's going to help Apple, like, I don't know, not to say that Apple needs money. It's such old thinking, but it's going to, you know, theoretically, that money goes towards a company whose technological pursuits do kind of benefit those of us who still want the $350 watch.
Right. And Apple, I mean, if anybody is going to be getting more money than they need, I mean, I'm okay with it being Apple. I mean, they do great work. You know, they've just last week I was reading about new data centers are opening in Europe with, you know, fully 100% renewable energy, wind power, solar, whatever. I mean, they are, I feel like they align mostly with the way I view the world. This just really seems extreme. And I think on the one hand, you're right. Yeah, take their money. It's no big deal. But on the other hand, we had talked a lot about Apple's focus. And this just doesn't seem like something they really should be needing to be worried about. You know, they have a lot of things on their plate, a lot of things to do. And again, having a product that very, very, very few people can afford just doesn't strike me as a good use of their time and resources. I mean, all the fancy bands they have and all the, you know, the custom gold they've come up with, I mean, it seems like a huge distraction from their actual kind of mission statement, really. You know, what is Apple here? Why are they here? Why are they a computer company? You know, what are they trying to do? The gold watch just seems to fly in the face of that to me.
Mm-hmm. I can see that definitely. I share some of your discomfort. And I guess I'm just trying to take a step back and, again, be optimistic that somehow Apple having the brains to capture this weird market that I totally can't understand. Otherwise, I'd be rich. That somehow that's going to benefit Apple. And I'm still naive enough to believe, you know, and full disclosure, actually own stock in Apple still. But
same here.
I'm still naive enough to believe, even if I didn't own the stock, I'm still naive enough to believe that a successful Apple makes for a better world for me personally. Like, I'm selfish about Apple being successful still, even though they are obviously the most successful that any company has ever been.
Right. Well, I don't know. This worries me a little bit. I complain about Apple. I complain about the App Store and things like that. But I've never worried about the direction of the company, I don't think. This bothers me. So we'll see how it plays out. But let's talk about price, because we've thrown around, you know, $10,000 at the high end. Do you actually think it will be that much? Like, if you had to say, how much is this gold edition going to be? Would you say that? And I would say, I was joking with you last week, I think we should use like Price is Right rules, right? It's like, without going over, like, how much do you think it is actually going to cost?
Well, here's the thing. I'm heavily influenced now by learning about this price per ounce of gold.
Yeah.
The problem is I can't really visualize how much gold it takes. And I don't know how much Apple has specifically said. Like, is this thing solid gold? Is it like, I don't even know. Maybe it's even disclosed and I just haven't done that research. But here's what I'm going to tell you. Going on the fact that Matt Drance says that gold is over $1,000 an ounce, and I also verified that independently, I also looked up and discovered that an ounce of gold is somewhere between the size of a quarter and a half dollar. So it gives you a good visual. Now, in my mind, you can use an ounce of gold, therefore, to make a pretty gold-looking watch. Like, you may not need more than an ounce of gold. That might not be realistic, but I can imagine squishing a silver dollar-looking shaped coin into, you know, into a mold and having it come out looking like a beautiful gold watch case.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I'm gonna go ahead and go with $1,000 just for the gold.
Okay. Well, then you can't. Say there's a $9,000 market.
No, I'm not going to go to $10,000. Here's what I'm going to do, though. I'm going to say that Apple is so. I'm going $1,000 for the gold. Maybe $1,000 for, I don't know, something else nice they do with that watch, with that version, like maybe the glass. Oh, that's right, the sapphire screen. Mm-hmm. The glass is supposed to be, you know,
yeah,
better.
The mid-range has the same better screen too, though.
What's that?
The mid-range watch, like the just the,
oh, does it
the
okay.
normal Apple Watch? I believe so, but the band that comes with the edition will be better. Like, uh-huh, there's going to be some cost in that for sure.
So I'm going to go ahead and go up to like saying that the thing is $2,500 to make.
Okay.
And I'm going to go from that. I'm going to leap to the idea that Apple will take a 50% profit margin on the highest end watch. And so therefore my total asking price, Manton Reese, for the gold edition is $4,999.
I think you're probably right based on, again, the quick research trying to become an expert in this that we've done in the last few days. But I still think it's too high. And I'm gonna put the top at Mac Pro price. I'm gonna put $3,000 to $2,999. I think that if you go beyond what a Mac Pro costs, I think you're starting to get into crazy land. And so it's not it doesn't really make sense from like what the cost of materials and the markup and that kind of thing. But just from like a gut feeling, it can't cost more than a Mac Pro. I'm going to say $29.99. And at first I was going to say even less.
Yeah.
But I've been slightly convinced, you know, I was going to say like $24.99 or something. I've been slightly convinced that this is going to cost a lot of money. I can't go over $3,000. I really think that, and this is maybe I'll be totally wrong, but maybe this is wishful thinking. But I think once you cross over that, this is more expensive than the most expensive computer Apple makes. It starts to get a little bit insane. And so this is kind of wishful thinking on my part, but I'm going to say $3,000. I'm going to say that, you know, with the band, that's the entry level price. You can pay more if you get the crazy bands, but that's a really great watch. It's gold, has a great band. It's got the great screen. That's how much it cost.
We've got our numbers in now. We're sticking to them. We'll see how we fare. I want to say one little comment about that, which is I'm concerned on Apple's behalf that if they're looking at this, considering prices, they look at it and say, you know what? We can make this gold watch and sell it for $29.99. Why don't we just do that? Somebody pipes up in the meeting and says, at what point is this thing so affordable that people don't take it seriously as a luxury watch?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So at some point, Apple...
Because $3,000 for a watch is so affordable.
Well, maybe they have to pour more gold into it to justify it. I don't know how many ounces of gold they have to put into it. Here's the thing. If this is actually worth considering, they may have decided what they wanted to charge for the watch to capture the luxury market and then work their way backwards to decide how much gold to pour into it.
Yeah.
Because they have to be able to justify it on some level. But let's say they go, you know what? Turns out people won't take this thing seriously unless it's $10,000.
Yeah.
So they go back and they figure out how to put 4 ounces of gold in the thing. That's one idea, one possibility.
No, I think that's actually the best argument I've heard so far, is that if they're serious about it being a luxury item, like go all in and like there's no doubt this is expensive and it's a luxury item. And because of the price, we've talked on the show many times about how price conveys something in marketing about your product, whether it's a 99 cent app in the store, or it's a $40 blogging app or whatever. I mean, that's a fact. So that makes a lot of sense to me. I hope Apple is not so focused on that, the luxury market, that they're thinking like that. But you make a really good point. And if it is really expensive, I think you're right. That's going to be the main reason, because they want it to be expensive. They don't want a lot of people to be able to buy this thing.
Yeah.
So what about the mid-range, though? Because like we know it starts at $350. Now we're throwing out random guesses that, you know, it's up to $5,000. I said $3,000. You said $5,000. Some people say $10,000. The mid one, the one that's just called Apple Watch, I'm really curious about, because I think that is going to be pretty popular. Not as popular as the cheaper one, but it'll be popular in the same way, you know, everyone buys an iPhone 6 instead of an iPhone 5C or whatever, unless you're me, because I really like the look of the 5C still. It seems like they could go a couple different ways. And at first I thought, well, let's just kind of get in the middle. Maybe it's $1,000 or something. But now I'm starting to think it's going to be a little bit less, because the problem is these bands. If you look at the website, they split into three collections, right? The Sport, the Regular, and the Edition. And the way they pitch it is you only get certain band choices in each of those lines. So if you go into the Apple store and you buy the Sport, you can't choose the leather band, right? Or one of the more expensive ones. You have to get the plastic, just kind of normal cheap one. And that started bothering me a little bit. Not in the is Apple actually doing good in the world and just catering to the super rich bothering argument, but like, which one do I get? Because I like the look of the leather. I like the look of some of the other ones, but I'm convinced I should not be spending more than a few hundred dollars on a watch. So would I be kind of bumped in, if I want a better band, bumped into paying $799, $899, $1,000? And I don't know if you've thought about that at all, but at first it was kind of confusing me. And where I ended up, and I think Jason Snell mentioned this on the Upgrade podcast, is that You when you buy the watch, you'll only be able to choose from the band that is in that collection, but you could always buy a second one. And unless Apple's gone completely insane and not made the bands compatible between the different watches, you could always go into the store and say, you know, I want this leather band as an extra second band. And they're not going to check, do you have the Sport, watch, or do you have the Edition watch? You'll be able to buy it, and then you'll have two, and you could swap them out. Does that make sense? I mean, that seems like the only thing they could really do without upsetting customers and limiting the choice people have.
Yeah, well, the question, just you talking about that, Manton, I went and looked at the Apple Watch page, and I'm already now starting to look at that thinking, what if I do want to wear this watch for more than just running? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be satisfied with the way the Sport band looks?
Right.
Because it looks very playful and like I'm out for a run. It doesn't look like I'm going to nice dinner, you know?
Exactly.
Unless I'm in California. So there's definitely two questions here. One of them is, like you were saying, is there going to be a limit to which strap you can get with which watch? And it sounds like there is, at least as you buy them from Apple. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a great resource that Louis Mantilla put together. We'll link it up in the show notes. That makes a spreadsheet of like all the different combinations that are available. So you can go there and you can look and say like, well, this is the strap I like, and this is the watch I like. Can I get them together? And he's got like check marks where you can and question marks where you may be able to. And then it's just blank when there's like no match. So yeah, that's a good question you have, which is if I go into the Apple store and I say, because here's the thing, they got a lot of these bands. I don't think they're going to just have the bands hanging up there for sale because it doesn't sound like their style. Maybe. Who knows? We'll see. Here's the thing, though. Can you go in and say, look, Apple Genius, I got this really sweet Apple Edition watch. It's at home, but right. I broke the band. Can you just sell me a new one? And they go, sure, that'd be $4,000. Or, you know, more simpler and more believable, I got this like really sweet, because looking at the sport watch, it looks like, I don't know, looks pretty similar to the medium level watch, right? Except for the band.
I don't think you'll really be able to tell the difference unless you look closely at one of those. I mean, the screen, the glass is better, and you know, obviously the case is better material. But I don't know, if you're just glancing at someone walking down the street, I don't think you can really tell.
Yeah,
I think the bands will probably look okay on the sport. If you like, for example, the classic buckle or the leather one, I mean, I think those will probably look fine.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, and listening to you say, you know, they're not just going to have them hang on the wall. Actually, I think they will. I think they will sell. Like, if you go in to buy a watch, there's a certain one that comes with it. A certain, you know, you say, if you want the sport, you have a choice of colors and that's it. If you want the mid-range one, you have a bigger choice. You buy the watch, you tell them which band you want, and it comes all together in the box.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they don't mix and match them. You call all together. But I do think they're going to have extras because they want to stress this idea that you can change the band because they talked in the video about how it snaps on and off so easily and stuff. So I think they will sell them separately. And I think if you go in and buy a sport and you get the black sport band and you want a fancier one later, I think you'll be able to buy a second one. And it's going to cost, maybe it costs more than the sport altogether, right?
Yeah,
maybe it's $500 or $1,000 for the band you want. I don't think it's going to be that much for some of these, the simple ones. But I think you'll be able to do that. And like you said, I mean, you they can't really enforce this without some kind of technical difference, which I think would be nuts.
Yeah, and you know, I'm looking now at the Apple page for the Apple Watch, and it talks about bands in a very generic way, listing among and between each other the leather bands all the way down to the sports bands. It seems to imply that they really are interchangeable. Why wouldn't they be, right?
Yeah, there's no reason
and not to make them that way. It seems to imply, you know, you might even buy like the luxury edition and then put a sport band on it when you want to go.
Exactly.
Running.
And someone even said that the edition one might come with like a cheap band and and the default one. Because, hey, if you're paying that much, you might as well throw in a $20 piece of plastic.
Well, I feel pretty good then about sticking with the sport. I think it's going to come down to that, basically. Like the difference between the sport and the watch, the mid-range one, is going to be largely the price of just like the price of what the difference in the bands is. Because, and so I don't know what the price will be. This, so $350 to start with. I think I could see, it's hard to fathom how they deal with that price spread in a beautiful way, right? Cause it's gonna be like $350, $650, $5,000.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. I don't know. I guess I don't care that much about the middle range.
Right.
Personally, I don't care that much about speculating, because I know they can do something reasonable there and nobody will think like, oh, you're leaving out that rich Chinese market that's willing to pay $10,000.
Exactly. And there's probably a little bit of an art to pricing that middle one, though, because you do want to, like, right now, everyone knows, you know, in our community, you know, and a lot of people around the world know they're going to get an Apple Watch. They know at least they'll be spending $350. If they price the middle one, the sort of normal one, low enough, they will convince a lot of people that already had $350 reserved to jump to it. And so that there's a little bit of an art, I think, to pricing that. I have no idea what it will be. If I were to throw out, I would say $799, $899. Mm-hmm. But I could see more. But I think if they can make it only, quote unquote, twice as much as the entry level one, I think they'll get a lot of people to jump to that wouldn't at $1,000.
Yeah. So it looks like the difference is, I mean, I know a lot of people listening know this already off the top of their head, but the main difference in the cases, for example, is that the Sport one is aluminum and the standard Apple Watch is stainless steel. And comes by default with that link bracelet instead of a rubber thing. So, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it should be all that much more expensive.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem like we'll it. See. We'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised if it is like $350 and then $500.
Right, and that's – so if I were to throw out a number today, it would probably be $799. But yeah. If they did $500, and I agree they could do it, I think a lot of people will choose that watch.
Yeah.
It's more expensive, but it's not so much that, you know, you're already spending $350, $499 is not that big of a deal, even $599. I think a lot of people will choose that. So if they can make a nice little profit at that price with the cheapest band, you know, that they do on the mid-range one, then that's pretty compelling.
All right, folks, well, we are having a nice long chat today, and we don't want to take too much time up here with the sponsorship. We just want to remind all of you great folks out there, both who are looking for a job or looking to hire, that we run our own job listing site at jobs.corent.org. And we want to remind you every so often here on the show, using our sponsorship spot to encourage you to go visit that site, subscribe to the Twitter feed, subscribe to the RSS feed. And if you're a manager or you know a manager who's in a position to hire talented Cocoa developer, send them that way and have them take a look. Once again, it's jobs.corent.org. It's a unique job listing site dedicated to Cocoa programmers for both Mac and iOS. So check it out. So Manton, another thing that changed since last week was sort of like, again, like moments after we stopped recording, the news was broken from 9to5Mac, Jordan Kahn, I believe his name is. I think he just sort of did the legwork of kind of digging up who Apple has hired over the past many months, you know, a year to 2 years, from the auto industry. And we'll link to it in the show notes, of course, but it was kind of compelling in mass. It was like, oh, well, you got like a person whose expertise is like drive motors for like cars. it's like all of the like, all the like kind of like just like, nah, Apple's not making a car. Why would they make a car? They're just hiring people, you know, for whatever. Oh yeah, well, why are they hiring people whose like specific expertise? It's like, I'm making this stuff up now because it's not fresh in my mind, but it's like, how do cars behave in wind tunnels? It's like, you know, it's like, well, we got this really expert wind tunnel maker to make specifically wind tunnels for cars. But no, we're just going to use that for refining the iPhone design. I was thinking about this a little earlier when you were fretting a little bit about Apple's move into luxury products, because here's an interesting example where $10,000 is luxury in a watch, and yet $10,000 is extremely economy in cars.
True.
Right? Yeah. And so Apple comes out with, let's just say, the funny thing too is last week I think I was saying I was with Jean-Louis Gasset in skepticism about the the prospects of an Apple Car. And for whatever reason, you know, no doubt partly because of that that 9-to-5 Mac story, it just sort of all started to crystallize. And I was like, yeah, you just can't deny when Apple has like a team of, now it's sounding like maybe 100 or more, maybe 200 of people who are led by a former, you know, Ford Motor Company employee, and the individuals in question come from places like Ford, like Tesla. And you go, well, why would all these people be getting together at a secret Apple campus? What would they make if not a car? And that's the question. And last week, you remember I was saying like, well, maybe they're just making like the Apple car brain that you can put into any old car. But I don't think that's compelling enough for this team. I don't think this team has something up its sleeve. And here's the other thing. I'm not as worried about it because none of the people they would hire like for working on electronic fuel injection, or well, they won't do that because it's electric car, allegedly. But none of the people they hire for this stuff that's very uniquely car engineering are particularly going to be poached from, you know, obviously some people, they'll use talents they have at Apple, but I'm reassured that a lot of the people they'd hire for these jobs, they're not working at Facebook right now. They're not like working even at Apple right now. They're not cocoa programmers whose efforts would better be served making the next versions of iOS and Mac.
Right.
They're working for Tesla, Ford, GM, whatever, you know, car companies. It's an interesting thing because suddenly it makes sense to me. Apple can use its infinite amount of money to invest in all new markets where there's no contention or very little contention for their existing talent base.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to really believe this thing. And it seemed crazy at first, but it really, it kind of in a way fits what Apple does well, which is they see something about to become big and they perfect it. And when you think of that thing, whether it's the iPod or something like Wi-Fi or something, right? It's like when the first iBook came out and Steve Jobs on stage did the fun demo with the hula hoop thing and, you know, all that kind of, you know, stuff, demoing Wi-Fi. I mean, they're really good at taking something that's up and coming and making it mainstream, popular, great. And there was a great discussion about car stuff on Accidental Tech Podcast, this latest one, or maybe the one before. I was just listening to it a few days ago. And one of the points that John made was Apple doesn't like invent like brand new battery technology, or they don't do that kind of pure science kind of stuff. But they do like what I'm saying. They take something that is kind of emerging and they make it great. And I think electric cars are like that. They had a rough start, but right now is the time that it's actually working. Like I said, I have an electric car. It's on the low end of electric cars. It's not a Tesla, the Nissan Leaf. And I think it's the most popular electric car, actually. I'm starting to see them all over. I see a couple Teslas here and there, but I see the Leafs pretty often. BMW has a new electric car that's really nice that I've seen around. And more than that, the infrastructure is working. Like, there are electric car charging stations popping up all over the place that weren't there just a few years ago. So for example, so I like to work out of the house. I work at home. I like to work out of the house sometimes. I go down to Whole Foods, fairly close to me, has a real nice coffee shop and kind of upstairs, you know, seating place. So I can look out the window. I can code and stuff. Just get away from my normal scenery of the house. They've got free charging. You know, they've got six electric car start charging stations in their parking lot, right? For free. You just plug in your electric car and charge for free. You don't have to worry about gas. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
And so these are popping up all over the place in Austin. I'm sure they're all over the place in Boston. And you might not notice them until you have an electric car, but the infrastructure is really coming together. And Apple, I could see them seeing the trend and seeing this is actually going to work, these electric car things, where before you were worried you couldn't drive, you know, 50 miles, like now you're going to be able to actually get places, especially as batteries improve. So I kind of believe this now. I think that maybe they're onto something.
We've gone from skepticism to not only believing, but being kind of excited about it.
Right. And it's still, I still think it's years off, right? They're not going to ship a car anytime soon. But I like that they're kind of working on this. And unlike a watch that's $10,000, which I think is just a huge waste of time, I think cars, you know, there's room there to build something that helps people and that is great.
Yeah.
You know, there's room in the – right now, today, I think there's a big kind of hole between the low end and the high end. Like there's room between like my car and like a Tesla Model S, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're going to go crazy high end. Maybe it's going to be a fashion item, a gold-plated car. Who knows? But I think there's room in there for Apple to do something eventually.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I'm trying to remind myself. So this, a lot of this comes back, too, to something else you said earlier about Apple losing its focus or the risk or the fear that Apple will lose its focus. And you perceive the gold $10,000 watch as a loss of focus. However, it would also be very easy to say pursuing the development and sale and maintenance support of cars is a loss of focus for Apple.
Yeah.
But part of this is you and I, everybody else who's known Apple for years has to start getting their head around the fact that the kinds of things that you would rule out, like in 1995, if somebody said Apple's going to make a car, I mean, I was already shocked to hear it in 2015, but if I heard it in 1995, I would have just been like, right, like how? I mean, two things have happened. One, at least two things. One, Apple has become insanely rich. So Apple has $170+ billion in cash, with more money pouring in every day. The other thing I wanted to mention is, two, you know, that's one thing. Two, cars have become increasingly more and more like typical computer hardware projects. They still have wheels. They have some motor, you know, safety issues, things like that. But compared even to 1995, especially when you move into the electric car realm, the thing is like a big MacBook Pro with wheels, right? So the like target is becoming more and more. And you might say, oh, well, Apple doesn't know anything about dealing with safety, seatbelts and all that stuff. Well, they do have whole huge infrastructure devoted to making sure that their equipment, the products they sell are safe. It's not the same thing. It's not saying, oh, does this crash test dummy survive when you run this car against the wall? But it is stuff like, you know, if this battery malforms, is there a chance that it'll electrocute a person's lap? Stuff like that, you know?
I think it's very similar now that you say it. Like when the whole bending iPhone 6 thing came out, you know, they brought press folks into their testing facility and showed them how they had, you know, weird machines that tried to bend phones 24 hours a day to see, you know, what the breaking point is and, you know, to see the durability of these things to simulate what real world use is over a period of years, but in a short amount of time. I think that's very similar to cars.
So the thing that I really need to remind myself is you can't judge what Apple chooses to do today based on these old fashioned, out of date ideas about both Apple's limitations and just sort of like the appropriateness of markets. The appropriateness of certain markets has changed over the years, even down to like the lower end stuff. Like it would have been stupid to imagine any computer company making a thermostat for your home, right? Like why would that have happened? It didn't make any sense before the internet, that's for sure. And more of these things are making more and more sense for technology companies to tackle. So Apple has way more money than it's ever had before, more money than it could reasonably spend in any short period of time on the order of years or even decades, really. And so the types of problems they would most naturally tackle, like what you said, I like what you said, Manton, about how this is a classic situation where there's a product that's gaining enough mind share that people know what it is and know that they might want one, but that there's not a perfect choice out there for them yet. And that's, you know, that's, I'm paraphrasing what you were just saying, but that's basically the iPod story, right? Like people knew that it was possible to have an MP3 player. they didn't really know whether there was anyone that was good enough, and there wasn't one that you could, quote, put 1,000 songs in your pocket with.
Yep.
So Apple comes up with a car that answers a question of what do you put on the billboard that's like 1,000 songs in your pocket. You know, maybe it's 1,000 miles in your pocket. I don't know.
would be, if they've secretly been holding back a 1,000-mile battery, that would be game over.
More power to them, right?
That would be amazing.
But you kind of have to expect now. I mean, maybe we were being unrealistic to expect that Apple wouldn't go into these huge markets. And I think that's possible because when you got $170 billion, now, this just came out too, Elon Musk from Tesla says he asserts that Apple has been poaching, you know, it's been news that he's been poaching folks from Apple and Apple's been poaching folks from him. But what he alleges is Apple in particular is poaching these folks with hiring bonuses on average of $250,000. And on average, a 60% pay raise. So
is that paid in 25 gold watches or is that?
That's right. I do not know. But you look at a company like Apple, whoa, what a formidable foe if you are in any market that Apple decides might be worth, you know, if you are in any market where you become the Diamond Rio of that market in Apple's sites, right? Mm-hmm. Or the creative computing, whatever MP3 players that Apple basically just like tossed asunder. Like they're just like, you know what? You don't actually own this market. We own this market.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting. We can talk more about this car stuff, I'm sure, in the future. But for now, I'd just like to acknowledge that I feel like 30 minutes after we stopped recording last week, my thinking about it changed dramatically. And I became convinced that Apple is at least seriously considering this idea and it has at least assembled a team that is kind of spitballing ideas for what a car would be.
And again, they don't have to ship it. They don't have to take it that far to justify the cost of a team, even the hiring bonuses and stuff. If they think there's something here, like it wouldn't take a lot of justification, I think, to start this process. And if they have to scrap it or if they decide it's too much of a problem of focus and it would hurt the rest of their business, scrap it. I think that's okay. I kind of like that Apple is experimenting with this stuff again, doing a little bit R&D, kind of pushing the limits of what their products can do because they've been so focused on a small product line for so long. They don't have to ship it, but you know they're working on something, and that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, there's also one other thing I would just add is there's also this element of when you have $170 billion. I keep saying that because I'm obsessed with it. But when you have all that money, it's kind of just prudent to invest some amount of money into whatever your competitors are investing money in, right? So you look at somebody like Apple, who's got to consider still Google a major competitor. You go, well, we've got $170 billion. They apparently are making some kind of weird self-driving car. Maybe we should at least be prepared to compete in cars in case it becomes clear down the road that, oh, you know, duh, it was like totally cars all along.
Right. Or worse, like Google does have a successful car. And I don't think Google, it's not really Google-like to do this, but it's certainly Apple-like. The car doesn't work with an iPhone.
Right.
Something.
Right.
And then Apple has to scramble to make their own car or something. Yeah, they need to get started on this process just in case.
The whole proposition, I think, starts to if you imagine Apple has this car, I wrote about this a little bit on my blog post. I'll link it up in the notes, but the whole proposition of an Apple car makes some things fall out that are really great for Apple. One of the things I mentioned was Apple still cares about navigation. They have to care about navigation because they're in charge of one of the preeminent mobile platforms in the world. And so Maps, in other words, needs to continue to get better. Wouldn't it be convenient for Apple if they had even like the low thousands of numbers of people driving around the United States in a car that was taking mapping data and sending it back to Apple? This is like kind of, could turn out to be strategic, like in a way that Google can't match unless Google also has a successful car. So like, you know, Google has a huge advantage right now. They have all this better map data. Part of it is they've invested in, you know, the Street View stuff for years and years now. And I don't know how many Street View cars Google has, but let's say it's like, I don't know, 100. Let's just say it's 100. Probably totally wrong, but
at least that, yeah.
Yeah. So they got to, let's say they have 100 cars. They have total control over those cars. They can equip them however they want to. They can put the camera up high. They can do things a lot better in some ways than probably Apple could do in an Apple car. But what if Apple has 10,000 Apple cars out there? Suddenly it seems like Apple could be in a position to have better, more higher resolution, and by that I mean like more places on Earth, more higher resolution data, real time, all the time. And I'm sure that the thing that comes to my mind, and I'm sure many listeners' minds right now as well, Google has Waze, very popular directions app. But Waze is still opt-in. A lot of people do use it, I think, but there's also a lot of like it's limited because it's in the phone. It's not in a particular car, say. So like, I don't know. I can imagine if Apple was thinking smart about this and thinking about how it ties into their navigation stuff. I can just think in like 5 minutes of being a dummy about some good ideas. I'm sure Apple could think of a lot of great ideas. My ideas are, you know, things like, well, put some, it's not that expensive to put, you know, cameras as good as the iPhone on like all four edges of the car. Right.
And cars nowadays already have a lot of cameras, like, you know, new, not mine. I just have a backup camera. I think the backup camera is actually required on all cars now.
Is it? Okay.
It's about to be, if it's not already. But a lot of cars go beyond that, and they have a few cameras on the side and stuff to help with parallel parking and, you know, lane, you know, blind spot lane problems and stuff. So it doesn't seem like a big stretch to me. I agree with you to have a couple cameras that are also doing Street View and map stuff.
And it would be easy for them to also add to that stuff like temperature, you know, thermometer. That's not, you don't get thermometer from Waze.
My car has a thermometer. I mean, most cars these days have that. So just putting these pieces together that are already in a car.
Yep. And the thing is, this would be a classic case of Apple having we own the whole stack advantage. Because somebody like Google right now anyway has to say, well, how can we get this information from, you know, somebody who happens to have an Android phone in their car or not even an Android phone, but it happens to run Waze, let's say. And then you can only get whatever the phone can get. And the phone has to be turned on. And like I use Waze sometimes and, you know, I'm careful to like turn off its tracking and stuff when I'm not actually using it for navigation. There's all this noise in the Waze situation because you don't know if you're stopped in traffic because you pulled over or because, you know, you, stopped for lunch, you know, I don't know. It's confusing. The car would know a lot of this stuff. Like the car would know whether the ignition's on, for example. Right. Anyway, we could probably go on all day about this, but,
probably so. I like your points though. I think, Apple had a rough start with maps, and it's pretty consistent with Apple's history to, if you have a rough start, kind of double down and iterate. And if they're playing catch up in a big way, I could see them really, really improving from where they started. And we'll joke and laugh about how bad maps was, you know, a few years from now. And it might seem inconsistent that I hate the gold edition watch, but I'm kind of excited or interested or think it's plausible that Apple will do a car, and I still think it's a long shot and maybe far off, but I like it in the way that I think companies should exist to build products that help people. I don't think that's a huge stretch, and I think that gold watch is just think that's not consistent with that vision. Cars, absolutely part of that.
I think you and I just happen to fall into that personality category where we don't value kind of glitzy, you know, fancy, expensive for their own sake things. And that makes it very hard for us. I mean, I never want to have anything that's a diamond. I never want anything that's gold. I never want anything that's just valuable for its value. And I get it. Some people like the way that the diamonds look. They like the way the gold looks. And so it's not as simple. It's not as simplistic as I'm making it sound. But let's be honest. There's a lot to the fact that this stuff is popular because it's valuable, not because the people like the particular right. ingredients that it's made of.
Yeah.
So I just can't relate to that. But I'm trying to keep an open mind and not just for the sake of Apple, like, well, go ahead and take their money, Apple, but also trying to keep an open mind from the point of view of somebody who wants to accept that it's okay if other people have those values. You know, those values I don't relate to them, but, you know, there's a lot of my values that don't relate to them, right? So it's part of a kind of just like tolerance for differences in people. Let people have their $10,000 gold watches and yeah. I'll kind of laugh about it, you know, same as these like designer bags. It's been, you know, a lot of comparison to that in the Twitters and stuff lately. It's like people buy these little like tchotchkes for their bags. They're like $1,000 and it's like a little like, so like a little puff. It's like a little, right. It's called a bag book. Are you tuned into this?
So I didn't want to say anything more about this, but I still have a big problem with what you just said, because it's not Apple's job, I don't think. Just because people want to spend $10,000 on a watch doesn't mean Apple should do it. There are a lot of people that want to do crazy things, and if Apple like catered to all of those whims, like, come on, there would be complete loss of focus. I mean, I don't think just because that market exists that I'm maybe stretching a little further into the realm of accidentally offending people, which I don't want to do, but just because a market exists like that doesn't mean Apple needs to get into it.
Yep.
I don't think Apple has to cater to that market just because it exists. And I think that they could easily focus on more reasonably priced watches that they could sell a lot of, and that would be fine. And if there are a few people who have so much money that they're just desperately want to pay $10,000 for a watch, and no one makes a good watch that they can buy that has a computer chip in it that does all the stuff the Apple Watch can do. Sorry, I'm not going to lose any sleep over that person like not being able to buy an expensive watch.
Yeah,
that I don't think that's Apple's problem.
I hear, you know, as much as I've sort of played devil's advocate here, I do also have a little bit of a bad feeling about that mentality that caters to rich people. So I share some of that with you. I guess I'm sort of putting it aside in my head a little bit and just kind of allowing it to be what it is. But I agree. I mean, the real value I see in your fear is that service of luxury would somehow then start to creep down and take over their mentality about other products that they make. And I think that's one of the things we value, and a lot of people value about Apple, is that even though nobody has ever particularly claimed that Apple stuff is cheap, it always seemed like it was, you know, it was a little bit more expensive, but you got what you paid for.
Right,
and
exactly.
For you and I, getting gold coating all over your watch doesn't count as getting what you pay for. Essentially, I think that's the bottom line. It doesn't count. We don't value it enough or in the same way that we consider it to actually be worthwhile. We don't consider it to be a worthy pursuit. Putting gold onto a piece of technology is not a worthy pursuit for you and I.
Right. I think that's a good way to sum it up. It's not so much that we don't value it. It's that I personally don't think that's a good use of anyone's time. There's a lot of good work that can be done in the world, and that's not it. That's not my value, but we did get a lot of really great listener feedback on this. A lot of people who are passionate about watches, and I'm not sure if they're all going to spend this much money on a watch, but they are going to spend more than you or I might, and they will feel like it will be a great value. And there was actually one listener said one thing that I want to close with, because I meant to bring it up earlier, that I think really hits at the heart of what we're going to see. This is from, let's see, Alec, what do you think? Do you think it's the French?
Oh, I think it's probably Dubois. But I have met Americans who pronounce that name Du Bois. So.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll just put them both out there. And Alex, we respect your pronunciation, whatever it is. Even if it's something else besides that. Maybe it's Dubois.
So Alex, he says in this email, the real question at hand is just how Apple views the luxury watch market. They made it clear they are targeting the luxury market, but are they looking to disrupt it or do they like the status quo? And I think that's a great question. We're not going to completely know the answer. I'm leaning toward they seem okay with the status quo, which bothers me, but yep. Maybe not. Maybe they are going to disrupt this thing, and it's not going to be $10,000.
$99. Gotcha. <Yeah. laughs>
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show this week. We did get a bunch of good email about this, and it's fun to talk about. A little bit longer show, but this is kind of important. This is a turning point for Apple. We'll see where it goes.
It's kind of important, and if you want to start a rallying fund to chip in for Manton's Apple Edition Gold Watch, I'll be setting up a GoFundMe site because, you know, as much as Manton claims that he can't understand it, you know what I'm really hearing is he's crying out for an Apple Edition Gold Watch. We're going to see what we can do for you, Manton.
Can I put a little disclaimer that I can spend that money for anything?
You can spend it on a Twitter account.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
All right. Well, good talking to you this week. We'll talk to you next week, Daniel.
Sounds good. Thanks, Manton. And folks, once again, if you are looking for a job or looking to hire, please, please, please consider visiting jobs.corent.org. Thank you.
See ya.